Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
I like three. It works for me.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
That's the secret to life.
With Margaret Apples
and Amy Wilson.
Welcome to my party, guys.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
Once you're an adult, you don't have to do PE anymore.
Hello, everyone. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And this week, we're talking about what all of this has taught us about our kids.
Oh, yes.
We've learned a lot.
We've been learning and growing, guys. Learning and growing.
We heard from one listener in particular, and I managed to lose her name. I'm sorry. And she wrote to us and said, can you please talk about the sort of how this moment has actually been kind of good for some kids and really hard for others? This mom has a special needs kid who's doing classes over Zoom, and this mom is actually having to like sit with her and hold her up so she can see the screen for these Zoom classes that are a pale comparison to what this kid is usually getting. And that is really hard. But I think for both the kids who have weirdly thrived during this moment and the kids who have really struggled, there's both ways there's stuff for us to learn and take forward.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that it certainly has been revealing. I mean, I'm going to come in hot, Amy, and say that this whole experience for me has been about learning that I like my kids much more and much less than I thought I did before this all began. And like, I am kind of joking, but at the same time, it's been chock full of lessons. I'll say that for it.
Yeah. So I thought we'd talk about that today. What we've learned about how our kids learn, how they sleep.
How they get along as siblings.
How they get along as siblings. The cardinal rule of sibling getting along still seems to apply in my house, which is I have three kids. They're 17, 15, and 12. And any two get along fine. I have three possible combinations and they all work well as a dyad. Get a group of three going and it's trouble. How about it? Your house, is it the same?
I agree. And I wrote a piece one time and labeling having a third that you have a valve sibling. And it's like, it releases the pressure to a certain degree. Like I can't really imagine how two would work even having three, because it is true that like the alliances form and break apart and that's part of it all day long, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like two must be hard. Like they're always at each other. They only have each other, you know?
But it's because there's an existence of the third, because any two of mine get along great as long as the third isn't around. But you're saying even the third's non-presence is still a sometimes presence that makes... If the two only had each other, they'd fight?
Yeah. I'm one of three sisters, and I feel like it's just been our lifetime thing that, like, it's good there's three of us, you know? I don't know. I like three. It works for me.
I have a quote to start with us and to help us remember that it isn't all good, all bad. Every kid is different. I love this quote. This is from Dr. Jay Belsky. He's a professor of human development. He said in terms of this and sort of, you know, hand-wringing about how this is affecting our kids, he says, the only thing that affects us all the same way is getting dropped headfirst from the 14th floor. That, you know, what's going to happen to somebody. The rest of this is kind of maybe good, maybe bad, maybe a little of both.
It's always a little bit of both. My sister-in-law has an expression. It's the double-edged sword, but it's the good news and the bad news is the same news. And
yeah,
there's almost nothing you can't apply that logic to. I was talking to my niece, who's just in a bad situation with the whole thing, was in a program that's gotten canceled, and she's a college graduate back home. It's just not great, you know?
No.
And I said, I don't want to be this person, but like, you will look back at this time and say, oh, this led to X, Y, and Z. That's all good. I mean, it's just, my dad always says, you never judge a crossroads. And I just think, oh, we're all in that place right now of like, we're being forged in the fire. We don't know what's going to come out the other end yet, but there's going to be good and bad from it.
And your kids can definitely surprise you. I have a sort of an Eeyore child for, I think you know what I mean when I say that. Like,
yes.
Ready to see the probably not going to work out in any situation. And last night, this child said, I really think it's going to be fine. I think school's going to start in the fall, but I'm just optimistic like that. And
I, I love it.
What? Who?
A forced optimist.
But right, don't prejudge how your kid is going to react to this situation. This sort of doom and gloom kid has decided that they are optimistic and that's how they're going to approach this. And like, thank goodness.
I love it.
Thank goodness I didn't pre-assume it was not going to be that way.
And I would just say that we've been having a lot of those conversations, that what you put into this situation is what you're going to get out of it. And that's been a nice lesson for the Eeyores in my household, including myself.
Let's start with little kids, because a lot of people listening have kids who aren't in school yet. And I don't want to not talk about that, because these were special kind of difficulty when you have a small child who isn't getting any kind of peer contact and isn't playing, because we, like grown-ups, we're bad at playing. I have a quote here, Dr. James Cone. He studies the neuroscience of human connection, and he says that we're not good playmates, grown-ups, because we're boring, we're impatient, and we have other things to do. And that it is a toll that's taking on these small kids who just want to play bad guys, and you can't do that over Zoom. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Although, yeah, again, the other side of that sword is that we play too much with our kids, and this has been a good reminder of that.
Right. Well, I mean, it's easier to say go play outside when they have, you know, siblings or cousins or the kid down the street to play with. Like right now, that's, it's sort of forced that conversation, right? If you have 1 2-year-old, 3-year-old at home who's saying mommy, mommy, you know, it's forced the reckoning of this kid is going to have to learn to play by herself. And that's a good thing, because, well, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that free play is how kids learn, and the more they're playing on their own, the happier, more resilient, more of a genius they're going to turn out to be when they grow up. You're doing a good thing by having them play by themselves.
Yep. I mean, I am really leaning into that. And I feel like that's where my instincts lie as a parent, which is do less, mostly because I'm just lazy and not that interested in it. But I constantly feel the hum of guilt, which is like, wait, everyone else seems to be like having these curated, amazing experiences. And my kids are like just watching screens a lot and playing, you know? And I have found a great relief in this time of like, oh, nobody's going to Mandarin camp, so I don't have to worry about it right now.
Right. Exactly. Like, we're all behind in math. We're all behind in learning to relate to peers. So it's going to be fine.
86 million people have already written this think piece, which is like our childhood was basically like our moms like drank tab and smoked while we like fended for ourselves in a very fundamental way. And I think there's something really good in that, that my kids are kind of getting to experience. Although, of course, the flip side of that is like, my kids are less likely to be like organizing baseball games amidst themselves and much more likely to be playing on their screens or looking at their phone.
Right. But it's a special thing. I mean, it is a thing. If your kid's been alone during these last weeks and months, my nephew, he's 3. He has pretty much seen his parents and my in-laws who take care of him, and they've created a very successful, you know, bubble that includes those 2 households. And, you know, he's great. He's fine. They sent us pictures of him in the backyard with this like incredible, you know, blow up slide into a pool, into this like, you know, water park for one. And it was so cute and he was having so much fun. But there is something, like I look at that picture, I'm like, one thing missing, another 3-year-old, you know, and it is something missing from that picture. And it is something that I think parents of onlys are struggling with right now. Like, is this going to be okay? And you just have to tell yourself, I think that there are gifts to being that resilient kid and it will be okay.
Yeah. And it's a draw. I mean, this is the one like old lady thing that I find myself saying to all people who are worrying about their kids. Like, and I mean, but it's true. You're not going to remember, you know, people who are like the potty training. I'm like, yeah, I did the same thing. I obsessed about it. And let me tell you, I can't tell you what age my kids did it or how they did it. Like 3 months, 4 months for a 3-year-old being separated from other 3-year-olds. Is it ideal? No, but it's not going to be the defining event of their life. I just believe that on a cellular level.
I think that's right. This is some good guide marks. I got this from the National Association for the Education of Young Children. These are the sort of questions you can ask yourself.
Oh, that sounds very serious.
Yeah.
Whatever they're up to, they sound like they know what they're doing.
So if you're one of those parents who's got a, you know, 2.5-year-old, a 4-year-old who's kind of seeing mostly you right now, these are the questions you can ask yourself. And if you, these questions are yes, then you're doing a great job. Did your child exercise his or her body today? Did they make some art?
Mm-hmm.
Did they play and did they have a conversation with somebody? Those are your sort of, you'll be okay. Yeah.
That's a really good 4-point touchstone. And guys, let me tell you something, insider tip. Even after quarantine, those are the only 4 questions you need to be asking. You don't need to like, oh my God, we're back to real life. Now I need to add, does my child speak 3 languages to that list? You don't. That list is a go-to. For every kid.
Let's read it again because I want to stuff it in my own head.
And also, it doesn't just apply to little kids. I'm thinking of this for my 11-year-old.
I'm thinking of this for me.
All right.
Right?
Hit me again. Exactly.
Did they exercise their body?
Good.
Did they make art? Did they play? And did they have a conversation?
Love it, guys.
I think we can do that. We can all get there.
We could just wrap this episode right now. That's it.
Right.
That's all the parenting advice you ever need, ever, right there.
That's the secret to life. Let's talk about how kids sleep and how we all sleep, because we definitely learned about that a fair bit during this by just letting our kids sleep until they wake up more often. The teenagers everywhere have become like taller and stronger and happier and calmer because they're all getting like another hour and a half of sleep than they usually get. And there's a whole movement out there saying like, we can't go back to making teenagers get on the bus at 6:20 a.m. It's not fair to them. Their circadian rhythms don't support this. My kids have gotten a lot more sleep during this time.
Mine also, and just the lack of pressure around sleep is amazing and
yeah,
love it. I mean, my kids still, mine are 11, 9, and 8, and they are all still up by 7 a.m. every day. So I don't have a sleeper in her. So I don't know how I would be dealing with it if I had to deal with like, at some point you have to go to bed because I don't want everyone sleeping till noon all day forever. Are your kids doing that, like sleeping late?
Yeah, I mean, I have 2 teenagers, so I definitely have kids who would sleep until you woke them, yes. And I go to bed before 2 and usually 3 of my kids every night because I'm tired at 10:30. And God bless them. Like, you know, I've read up on this. Teenagers are not tired at 10 p.m. They are just getting started. And it's been nice to allow that, to just kind of be like, okay, don't stay up too late, okay? But they're getting enough sleep because they don't have that commute to school. They don't even have the get in the shower necessarily, right?
Oh, they definitely don't have the get in the shower at my house.
Yeah, especially even if you have a Zoom thing. Now, my oldest is doing a remote internship right now. So that is very nice. It's gotten him on a schedule, up, having breakfast, getting a, you know, nice looking, his Zoom wardrobe, right? Like,
right.
Party from the waist down. And, you know, and sitting in front of his computer at 8:30 every morning. I'm thrilled he has that to do now that school is over. Yeah, my 15-year-old is starting to, you know, it's the days are getting a little free form for him. But letting him sleep as much as he needs to sleep has been a revelation. It really has. And I think for him, too. I think my kids have just gotten during this, like, I really do feel better when I get as much sleep as I need. You know, and they're not rushing from activity to activity. My kids in a normal spring would have been getting home from practice at 7 o'clock to take a shower, eat dinner, and then start 3-4 hours of homework at 8. And we didn't have that this spring, and it was good. It was nice.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the biggest downside for us right now is that we have just spent way too much time together. Like, we're sick of each other's faces. Like, we're so on each other's nerves. But on the flip side, the not rushing around thing cannot be overstated. And anyone who listens to this podcast knows I have firmly been team not rushing around for a long time.
That's true.
But The flip side of that is I've had a tremendous amount of guilt. Like, I think everyone else is doing it better than me. And it has been lovely to just be like, whoa, welcome to my party, guys. It's the we're all home and relaxing and eating dinner party. So I have felt good about how much we're not doing, but I welcome everyone to join me in the land of not doing a ton of activities. It's great, even after this ends.
It's an opportunity, right? Whether it's like overscheduling or sleep, to sort of pause and revisit, okay, what about this worked? Which for me was like, okay, my kids getting like 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep a night really worked. So how can I bring that back in? When the real world starts nibbling at the edges, right? How can we preserve the things that are sort of most important to our well-being?
Yeah, that's it. All right, we'll be right back.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at them. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practiced after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. Okay, so let's talk about what we learned about how our kids learn during this time, because it was a lot for me. The surprising part was that some of our kids actually did better during online remote schooling, homeschooling, whatever it is you want to call it. This was a forced experiment for all of us, and some of us suddenly saw kids who were thriving. And did that happen to you or anybody you know?
Unfortunately, it did. And I keep saying, I'm like, I have to just shut out the part of my brain that has realized that one of my kids would do much better homeschooled full time, because I can't manage it. I don't want to do it. It's not for me. But I have one of my kiddos who is just very, very distractible. And almost all that I ever heard about school was about what happened and who did what and who said a curse word, and then the whole class got in trouble. And I don't know. I feel that for him, peeling away a lot of the distractions of school and having it become about just learning. And the other thing that you see is, like, people always say this, there's always been a theory of, like, there should be like a 16-hour work week, that so much of work is really getting to the office, chatting with people, that you really only do a certain amount of work at work. And then a lot of the time at work is filler time.
Right. There would be no Cyber Monday, right? With everybody buying all their Christmas clothes the Monday morning after Thanksgiving, if work was really the place where you got work done all the time.
Right. And not that people are just like slacking off at work, but they've seen, doing a ton of studies, that there's only, you know, 3 hours or so that you're actually working, and that most of the day is kind of meetings and other things. And I feel like for my kid, the 8 hour school day, when instead he just did the 3 hours of work kind of on his own schedule, he was able to like really dial into that work in a way and make a lot of progress. And I think it was very, very positive for him to not have to do the 5 hours of child drama that surrounded that 3 hours of work. And yet I am not ready to homeschool him.
There's a really good website that I actually discovered researching this episode called edutopia.org, and it's designed for teachers, but there's a lot for any of us to learn from this. And so if you look at the website right now, there's tons of content on, okay, so how do the kids learn? How are we going to do this if we have to do it again? You know, what went right? What went wrong? And Nora Fleming wrote an article. I'll put the link in the show notes right where you're listening right now, or at whatfreshhellpodcast.com. And I loved this anecdote. She interviewed a teacher named Montanique Woodward, who teaches middle school in Washington, D.C. And she reported like a version of what you're saying, that she had a class clown, let's call, maybe that's an old deluxe alert calling somebody a class clown. Now you'd say they have, back in my day, ADHD, but back in our day it was class clown. So in the seventh period, right at the end of the day, she had a class clown, and like, good kid, but she kind of dreaded it because this kid just got the whole class whipped up, right? It just was really hard to control her seventh period class because of this one student. And that student was thriving during remote learning, and those problems went away. So she suggests that not having the distractions, the everyday distractions around for kids like that, helps them focus on the work, because some kids, she says, really can't separate the social things going on and the person walking down the hallway from the work. And this has been really good for them.
Yeah, that's my guy, 100%.
And there's other things in this article. They also talk about there are themes of the school day that don't work so well for some kids, like the bell, right? And the jarring bell and the getting up and moving. I had a kid, I don't hear this now, but I heard it when he was little, that he hated transitions, right? He was like the last one to line up for art, the last one to put his coat on and go on the play deck. He really just hated being interrupted 12 times a day during pre-K to go do something else. And that a lot of that also went away, and it enables the creative, quirky kids to really do that. The thing I've always heard about homeschooling being so great is like, if your kid loves to draw, they get to draw for 4 hours a day, right? Like all our kids had an experiment in that. And I have a friend whose kid loves to draw like cartoons and stuff, you know, like Captain Underpants kind of things. And he's a third grader. And he has during this time just like gone down that rabbit hole. And he made, a 9-year-old made like a 40-page choose your own adventure comic book for one of his characters that is really impressive. And it works. It holds up. You can choose your own adventure. And this kid would never have had the time to do that in the normal schedule. And it was really eye-opening for his parents in terms of like, wow, he has this ability, but we're spending instead a lot of time hearing how he needs to listen in class. You know what I'm saying?
My sister-in-law, who I speak about often on the podcast, she's an educator and knows a ton about childhood development. And she said this to me a long time ago, and it really stuck with me, that elementary school tests something fundamentally that most people are not good at, which is doing a little bit of everything all day. Like, there is nothing that replicates that as an adult, where it's like, okay, Amy, you're going to start the day with art. Next up, some archery, then reading and English, then math skills, then, you know, physical education. Like, that is not the way that we function as human beings. And so there are certain kids, and I have one of them for sure, who don't thrive in that environment. Mm-hmm. They don't like the transitions. They're good at certain things, and they don't want to do the 6 things they're not good at. I have another kid who's like, I love life. And she loves that environment. She's like, I also love art. Oh, and I also love archery. And she's built genetically for elementary school. And so I think for our kids who are not as good at the transitions, and they're not jacks of all trades, they're really masters of one or two, it has been a great time for them. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going a different direction probably, but it's still good, I think, to remember that lesson that like not being good at eight things is not a skill. That's not something we should reward, or I don't even care about rewarding it. That's not something that we should hang our hats on with our kids. It's like, are they thriving in this particular environment? And like my kid who struggles with that is always, I'm always told like he is very self-directed, you know, and he's like good at preferred activities and not good at unpreferred activities. And
yeah,
the reality is like a CEO is his main skill is good at preferred activities. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's not necessarily a test of something that is really important for kids. And it's just good to keep that in mind. And this has been a good reminder of that for me.
I've actually read that in the past. It really stuck with me about ADHD, that for kids, for people with ADHD, that middle school is a little easier than elementary school. High school is a little easier than middle school. You know, that it gets a little easier as you get older, with the finish line being adulthood, where you're still going to have your struggles, I guess. But each layer sort of peels away some of the stuff you really don't want to be doing, right? Once you get to college, you don't have to take math anymore if you really don't want to.
I didn't. And it was great.
Once you're an adult, you don't have to do PE anymore, right? Like, no more gym, no more this, no more stuff that I think is boring. And you can focus on what you want. And there's probably a takeaway there. If you have a kid who loves to make choose your own adventure comic books, and you figure that out during this time when they had unlimited time to self-occupy, then maybe that is a kid who doesn't need a ton of after-school activities. Maybe that kid does need more time in their room imagining, that that's something you can keep doing.
The other X factor that we haven't discussed in this, and I think it's really important, is the fact that you're involved as a parent and like that role. So the thing that didn't work great for us is that my kids don't like me being their teacher.
Yeah.
And so I have spoken about this previously, but I am a Boy Scout leader. And the first thing they tell you as a Boy Scout leader is that your child will be the worst behaved scout in your den. And you will see behavior from your child that you've never seen before. And that it's going to be really hard. Because, and what we had two leaders of the den, and very, very early on, we decided that my co-leader was in charge of my kid and I was in charge of her kid. Because your kid sees you in a different role. They don't see you as the teacher authority figure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there is so much conflict inherent to that, that you can't really take that out of the equation. Like, I think if my child had a tutor at home, he would have aced homeschooling.
Yeah.
Because all the friction around homeschooling was like, don't tell me what to do, mom.
Help me, stupid mom, right? Who doesn't know anything.
Help me, stupid mom, who I'm going to yell at. And like, it devolved into screaming matches with all of my kids at least a dozen times, where I was just like, you are not going to abuse me for trying to teach you PEMDAS. Like, it's not going to happen. This is not working for me.
I wish I could tell you that got better with ages and stages, but no, it doesn't.
I'm sure it gets worse, though.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a whole conversation that has happened on our Facebook group and stuff. Homeschooling is not what we've been doing. We've been doing this like very like crisis centered, oh my gosh, let me fill in and do this. And there's a lot of talk and work around this. I don't even think it's our goal to talk about how to successfully homeschool your kids, because I don't think most of us are doing that. We're talking about like how to survive this unique experience, which is not the same thing as homeschooling.
Right. Can we talk about the kids who didn't do so well during this time? Because I have had those too.
Sure, I've got some of those as well. That's the good thing about having three. You've got one of everybody.
I noticed during this time, I thought that the even more reading and working on screens instead of, you know, marking up a PDF, writing in a notebook, reading a paper book, even more of it moved online because it had to. For all of my kids, it was a lot of typing stuff instead of writing things down. And I noticed I have one kid who really struggled with that, who needs the paper real life, not on the screen, not with the, you know, Snapchat notifications coming in the side. It was a little harder to concentrate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my daughter, who is basically like made in a lab to thrive in elementary school, it was not for her, you know? I mean, she loves the social aspect. She loves being in class. She liked the Zooms with her teacher and like where she was all together in class. But, and God bless these teachers. I mean, God bless them. The fact that they would even attempt to teach anything to a bunch of 8-year-olds on a Zoom class where like they're all talking at the same time. And so now let's look at how we add these two numbers. And it's like, right. But first, here's my dog. Look what he can do. I mean, God bless these people. It was a hot mess.
You're right.
And it wasn't a lot of learning for her. And luckily, she's a big reader and she likes baking. And so we were figuring out some number stuff. And I mean, for her, we just didn't do a ton of, she didn't learn very much.
Yeah. And it's okay when they're 8 and it's a little harder when they're in middle school, right? Like in my case, the reluctant reader in my household became a more reluctant reader.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my reluctant reader became a like refuse to reader. It was tough.
Yeah. It's tough. And I'm still dealing with that. And part of that is like books instead of screens. Okay, let's read a book. Well, it became more clear to me the ways in which my reluctant reader struggles when I was overseeing the homework more clearly. Thank goodness, these days there are all sorts of ways our kids' teachers understand them that I think we even miss sometimes, because our kids' teachers have a much more sophisticated understanding of our children and how they learn than, I'll speak for myself, than I did. I was surprised by some of the things that one of my kids found difficult to do. I didn't really know it until I saw it for myself because I was overseeing the assignment, not the teacher. And it was a really good assignment for me because it's not that it alarmed me, but it was sort of like, oh, right. Okay, this is a thing and this is something we're going to have to really help this kid with. The teachers had sort of taken that off my plate to such an extent I wasn't really aware of it.
I've always made that argument about homework. I'm not a big homework person, not a fan in general as a concept. I think it can be counterproductive in many ways. But the one thing I do like about homework is it gives me a half an hour at night to see what they're struggling with.
Right.
You know, oh, this kid. Otherwise, you know, I just wouldn't be that dialed in, which would also, spoiler alert, probably be okay. Like, guess what? My parents weren't dialed into how I was doing in math class, you know? And guess what happened? In high school, I was terrible at math. I couldn't do anything. And they panicked. And then guess what? My life turned out fine.
Right. Are you a math teacher? No. Did it work out fine?
I am not a math teacher. And like, luckily, I married a dude who graduated from MIT. So I solved my own problem.
Nice.
Because he can teach them PEMDAS and I can have a cup of tea.
It's very Jack Spratt and Mrs. Jack Spratt.
Yeah. But guess what? You can solve a lot of problems in this world that don't have to do with being good at math when you're in sixth grade. Turns out fine, guys.
Good to know. The other thing that I think my learners found hard in this time was the lack of regular feedback. Like my high schoolers got a sort of mid-trimester report that the teachers very kindly, like the main messaging was like, great job, everybody, doing a good job. I see you working so hard. I see you trying on the Zoom screen. Great job. They clung to that. It was like an oasis in the desert. And it was hard for them to not see their teachers and not get that excellent question. I mean, they were getting it over Zoom, but it's not the same. And I saw them wither a little bit from that lack of feedback from their teachers. They were more worried about how they were doing when they weren't there in person with the teacher to pick up on their cues, I guess.
Yeah. Even that's a double-edged sword though, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay. A little less, you know, I'm just so team, a little less praise of our children would go a long way. So I think in general, like, I mean, I've said it before, the elementary school experience to me, like the big problem with my kids' elementary school experience is like, it's a magical wonderland of fun. Like, and then welcome to real life, kids. Like, it's not a magical wonderland of fun. So I think a break from all of the feedback and praise also has some upsides.
All right. When we come back, let's talk about how our kids socialized or not during this time.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
And now, what we say about our kids versus what we mean about our kids.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast, we say,
they are always surprising me.
We mean,
this morning, I came into their bathroom and found out they were having a naked ninja fight with the cat. We say,
he loves to do a deep dive into things.
We mean,
literally, the only way I can get him to talk to me is to spend 45 minutes listening to him recite basketball statistics. We say,
he is so spirited.
We mean,
every item I've ever valued over the course of my entire lifetime is now broken. We say,
the boys are growing like weeds.
We mean,
I am spending half our take-home pay on groceries. It's like living with a couple of feral bears. We say,
she is a true original.
We mean,
yeah, this one came out kind of weird.
This has been What We Say About Our Kids versus What We Mean.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast. All right, Amy, we're back. We're talking about socialization. My kids, I will say the biggest lesson for my kids is that they have had to work it out with each other. And I'm kind of impressed by them. They've done a really nice job. I give my kids a tip of the hat. They have, the three of them, 11, 9, and 8, have been nonstop together for 3 months. And I'm just amazed that they haven't turned to violence to solve their problems. And they basically, they fight, they work it out. I let them have a lot of room, you know, and I've stopped intervening in most things. And we do, I think I've discussed, we have a weekly meeting on Sundays and like a family meeting in the morning. How's it going? And I'm like, well, here's what I'm seeing, you know, and they're able, I feel like we have struck a peership, the five of us, the parents and the three kids. And very early on in homeschooling, I may have said this, I told the kids that like, this is going to be really hard for me, especially, and your dad to some degree, although he's much more patient. And if it's not going well, you can just say patience or break, and we will walk away from each other for a while and come back together. And it kind of helped like guide our whole experience of the thing of like, this is gonna stink, but you're part of the world, you're part of the universe of how this functions and you have a say in it. And I feel like that's been a good lesson for us.
God, like all five of us in my house have had a, you know, complete Oscar-winning meltdown, like, I'm not gonna take it anymore, like that kind of thing. Right. You've all done it.
Not without my daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. We've each had our moment, and it is funny how like the world takes care of us. So the person who is having that, like there is always somebody else at the table who was the person losing their mind last week who now can be like, okay, I think this has just been a lot. There's a lot of together time. We can maybe just take a break. It's amazing to me how my spouse and I and even my children can change positions so readily. Thank goodness, because otherwise, yeah, we would have all, I don't know what, jumped out a window by now.
Well, and I think for those of us in my family, of whom I am the number one, who have trouble with our emotional regulation, The idea is there's no solution to this. And it's been interesting to play that out to the end too, right? Because one of my kids who struggles with emotional regulation, I often am trying to find a solution to stop the tantrum, basically, you know, that I take that on myself as, okay, well, let's make this compromise, or let's figure this out, or let's do your breathing, or let's this and let's that. And I've just gotten to a point of like, go figure it out and come back when you're done, because I got my own emotional regulation problems. And for myself, and finding the answer in hard times, it's been a real learning.
Yeah. And that is, I've been using that technique in my house myself too. When your kid is really losing it, they're anxious, they're frustrated, whatever, they do need to know. I'm not talking about a 2-year-old, but I am talking about a 10-year-old. They do need to know that they have it within themselves to calm down without you doing it with them, for them. You know what I mean? Like, go work it out.
It's been good in some ways for us. And like, you've got to figure this out. And here's the thing. We're all in this bad situation together. And that's something that we haven't really experienced as a family. I've had, you know, let's say when my mom passed away, I'm having a hard time. You guys need to respect that. Here's the thing. And you need to cut me some slack during this time. That's one thing. This is now a situation of, we are all in this boat together. And if you're going to befoul the boat.
Yeah, that's well said.
It's really not okay to the rest of us, because we're all in this boat together. So listen, emotional regulation dude, you've got to figure this out, because I cannot have you in this boat with me acting the fool, because we're all in this together. And it's been difficult and challenging, and sometimes hasn't gone great. And for myself, it's been sort of a revelation of like, oh, I actually also have to get this together to a certain degree, because
right,
we're literally not leaving the boat. You know, we just took a family drive and a long car trip, and it was super challenging. And I would say myself and my emotional regulation dude had the hardest time with it. And it was literally an exercise in, you have to figure out something else to do except for complain about being in the car, because we're not going to have it. We're the five of us. We're literally in this car together.
Right.
And we're not going to sit here and listen to you complain. And, you know, his response at one point was like, oh, get out of the car on the side of the road. And I was like, honey, don't tempt me. You don't want to tempt me again with that suggestion, because I'm getting pretty darn close. But guess what? We didn't have to leave him by the side of the road. And he had to figure it out. And he did.
And there's like slightly more compassion in your cup, maybe, because you do know, like, oh, this kid is like in month 4 and he can't take it anymore. And like, you get it, because it's your thing too. It has helped me greet it with a little more compassion. Like, I know what you're freaking out about. Me too, right? And
yeah,
you need to stop doing it all the time or whatever. But it's not like, what is going on with this kid? It's, you don't wonder.
That's right. Because literally we're in it together. I know this stinks.
Yeah.
But I think for all the kids, facing a little adversity is not the worst thing to happen to our kids, for most of us. I mean, I'm speaking from a place of like great privilege, and I get that. But for a lot of people listening too, like, not getting what they want, facing some adversity, these are good lessons for our kids. And we should absorb those lessons. You know, don't let the lesson pass you by, because you're being gifted it in a certain way.
One thing I learned about my kids was the socialization thing, was that like, they do socialize differently and seem to have different needs for it. So I have a 12-year-old girl who has spent a lot of time FaceTiming, Zooming, house partying, whatever, like talking to classmates online. I mean, sometimes for like a couple of hours, looking at their kitty cats, whatever, right? And she has weathered this with a ton of goodwill and resilience, but that's kind of her personality. You know, she is our sunny kid. So I looked at that, and at first I was like, she's talking to her friends all the time and she's in a pretty good mood and she seems to be weathering this well. So that means the kids need to be talking to their friends on Zoom and FaceTime. So I tried to set it up for another one of my kids who has shown little interest in that. And that kid continued to show little interest in that. And I had to sort of accept, like, again, like, that's not for everybody. Some people really draw oxygen from that. And some kids think that's super dumb and weird and don't need it and maybe never did. I don't know. Have your kids, like, some talk to kids and some not?
Yep. for sure. And one strange revelation of this, and I hate to come out with a pro Fortnite stance, guys, because you know I was firmly against, but I gave in during the quarantine because I thought, I don't know what else I'm going to do. And I will say, for a 9 and an 11 year old for whom socializing is complicated in different ways, they're both boys, there has been something really interesting about them being able to socialize while doing a secondary activity, which is playing this video game. So they're on a headset talking to people. Both of my boys have really expanded their social circles, and both of them have dealt with, like, bullying is not the right word, but like some inappropriate behavior kind of on the games, where they're like, well, we just had to say we are leaving this game and we are not allowed to participate in this kind of behavior. And I feel like they've learned some interesting social lessons. And we had one interesting experience where one of my kids had a friend who they were seeing in this like very socially distanced way, and it was my son's birthday, and we set up chairs like across the driveway so that kids could come over and say hi. And this one kid and my son sat across the driveway, and they just didn't talk at all for 20 minutes, and it felt really awkward, and I felt bad about it. And then at the very end, they exchanged their Fortnite names, and what do you know, they get on Fortnite and they're BFFs. They talk nonstop for an hour straight.
Oh my gosh.
And there's just something about the headset interaction where they're doing a secondary activity that makes it easier for shy kids to like have friends. It's kind of nice.
I never thought about that. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, that the way for us as grownups to have fun Zoom calls that aren't depressing with our friends is to have the secondary activity, like be playing Scrabble at the same time. And
right, watching the Indigo Girls, yeah.
Yeah, and so of course that exists for kids. I really hadn't thought of that, but they will find it, right? Like, I guess I'm seeing with my kids, I am sort of feeling bad about them not seeing their peers, you know, being removed from peers at such an important time in their lives. I have a tween and two teens, but I have discovered, as you say, like for one of my kids, it's Minecraft, the Minecraft server and the chat box that's going on, that, and of course the social media interactions that I'm not even seeing that are happening while they're in the backseat of the car. They got it. Like, they're filling their cup in ways that I don't have to be in charge of. And it's not perfect, but it's working.
Yeah. I miss other side of the coin today, but there's also like issues with it where I worry a little bit more about, I'm doing a lot more checking my kid's chat on his phone. My 11-year-old is the only one who's like even in that world at all. But
yep.
I'm finding I need to dial in a lot. I don't want them in a back bedroom talking to a bunch of kids I don't know.
Yep.
You know, so that's been something to figure out about it, which is not just like, oh, look, they all get along so well online and they get off when there's anything inappropriate. I'm not thinking that that's the way this is actually going. So that has been a little bit of a headache to kind of keep a half an eye on that.
Yeah. And yet I don't think you're wrong to think like this has to be allowed right now, like some of this, so that they can have socialization, which will keep us all going. Yeah. So keep an eye on it. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I find that for myself is like, oh, the socialization part is, we drove over to my dad's house for a while just for a change of scenery. And I was thinking like, oh, it'll be so nice because he has a pool at the house and we could swim and that'll be so nice. But one of the things I find is like, I used to walk with a friend in the afternoons, like socially distanced walk. And it's like, I have cut ourselves off socially a little bit. And I underestimated what a role those like small social interactions were playing. So something to keep in mind.
It's hard, like, right, to sort of say, are you okay with this, when we keep having to have those slightly difficult conversations and be okay if the answers, as we all start to emerge a little bit, but
right, from our little cocoons.
I guess what I'm learning is the children will lead the way, that they kind of know what they need. And this moment has shown me ways that what they need is not what they're getting, but also that they know how to create the right workarounds for themselves if we let them.
And I think this is a great time for this conversation, because as we start to ease things up, what did we learn that we can take away from this? Like, it wasn't all bad lessons. Some of the lessons were good.
I have a quote here from Rosie Reed. She is the 2019 California Teacher of the Year. That's what she has to say about this moment.
Oh, congratulations, Rosie.
Yeah, Rosie Reed. So she says, I can't say enough about how this closure has changed my entire approach to teaching because I see how it has been an amazing respite for so many students. So that's what the Teacher of the Year says. We need to change our approach.
Rosie, you solved it. I think that's it. Like, learn what you learned before you rush back. It's the episode of The Simpsons that I keep referencing where, like, the electricity goes out and everyone's out, like, playing in the fields and, like, hugging each other and, like, dancing around. And then someone's like, the TVs are back on! And everyone runs back inside and, like, sits back down. And learn the lesson of the electricity being off for a while and don't just discount that all when things start to return to normal.
I'm glad we had this talk. I learned a lot this week. I figured some things out while we were talking.
I'm glad we had this chat, Amy. I'm glad.
We want to hear how this is going for you. What went well for your kids during this time and maybe not so well? There's a lot of ways you can tell us. You can come to our Facebook page, facebook.com/whatfreshhellcast. We got a page and a group.
And a group, guys. We also have a YouTube channel now because we're making videos. That's one thing that started to happen for us while we were in quarantine. We started making videos.
That's right.
And so find us on YouTube by searching What Fresh Hell Podcast and you will see our cute faces there.
We're everywhere. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We're on Pinterest now. It's like we TikTok. We're on all the things. So whatever thing works for you, find us.
Oh, God. TikTok. My kids are so upset that we're on TikTok. Can I tell you? They keep moaning about it. They're like, I don't understand why we're on TikTok. But we do, guys. So find us there just to, if nothing else, than to embarrass my children. And with that, we will talk to you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.